Too soon. Too soon. Too soon.
LKTV plus canceled too soon equals
two
true
podcasts
love forever.
Two podcasts of the television.
Two great podcasts that taste great together.
Hey, yes. you got LKTV and our canceled too soon.
And you got our canceled too soon and our LKTV.
I'm gonna eat it.
The most edible podcast
best,
on the airwaves.
Best Christmas wishes, everyone. We are the all four of us are here to talk about our favorite Christmas
who are
TV
we?
Commercials. I'm Alonzo Duraldi.
Because this is going out as a freebie.
It is
to the people who get Linoleum Knife on a regular basis,
right?
And they might not know any of us.
Okay, well. I'm Alonzo Duraldi. I'm film reviews editor at The Wrap and co-host of Linoleum Knife and co-host of Who Shot Ya on the Maximum Fun Network.
I'm Dave White. I am also the co-host of Linoleum Knife and a film critic for The Wrap.
I'm William Bibbiani. Everyone calls me Bibbs. I am a film critic for sites like The Wrap and IGN. And I co-host the podcast Canceled Too Soon and also critically acclaimed with my best pal over here.
My name is Whitney Seibold. I am a film critic for sites such as IGN and criticallyacclaimed.net, and I, too, co-host the podcasts you just mentioned.
Yay!
I'm the Zeppo of the group.
Oh, stop.
Zeppo was the sexy one.
That's true. He always got the girl.
Yeah.
I'm the Gummo who never made any films. if only Gummo hadn't been a film. Anyway, that's another story for another day. We're here to celebrate the holidays because we like Christmas, and who doesn't, really? I'm incidentally...
Well, there are lots of people who don't like it.
That's true, but they're wrong, so we're not going to get into that. And because I mention it, I'm also the author of Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas, which is a guide to holiday films.
Interesting. Where is that available?
It's available on Amazon as a book or as a Kindle. But hey, we're talking about TV today, specifically... advertisements, which at Christmas time, you know, get better in the way that hand soaps and candles do.
Well, yes. every advertisement ends up having a Christmas theme because Christmas drives the economy, whether we like it or not.
Right.
It doesn't matter what the product is. They're going to tie Jesus to it,
and,
however they can.
Or at least Santa. And here's,
same person.
And look, here's the thing with that. Christmas is a time for... tradition, and in marketing lingo speak, tradition is you're going to buy our stuff in December again, right? So we end up getting a whole bunch of commercials just sort of reminding you that Coca-Cola is a thing, just in case you weren't aware.
And how much you love it.
And we have all
There's
of
two
these,
S's in Christmas, Cratchit, and they're both dollar signs.
We have all of these Christmas commercials. Many of them are iconic. A lot of them are repeated every year because they become part of this weird Yuletide tradition.
Right.
Or they get updated repeatedly, which is one of the commercials we're going to be talking about. Alonzo and I, we were talking about, like, what can we do for Christmas this year? Because you and I both like the crispy. And this is what we settled on. So just enjoy. Just sit back and enjoy the podcast, everybody.
And this is like a wallow in nostalgia for most of us, because these are ads we remember from our own childhoods, things that are dear to us personally.
Yeah, they're near to us personally.
Yeah, rather than things you're going to see on TV this season.
And does anyone else feel a little guilty for, like, doing an entire podcast celebrating commercials?
No.
Nope.
Good. Okay, great.
Well, because I think, you know, for one thing, there's a lot of artistry involved, especially when we start talking about the more recent long-form commercials, particularly the ones in the UK, I think. Those are almost sort of mini-movies unto themselves. But you're right. I think in the way that so much of our childhoods shape our thoughts about Christmas as adults, it's not just the TV specials that we watch or the movies that we watch, but a lot of times those commercials, just from sheer repetition, become part of our Christmas experience.
And, you know, we don't have this, I think, as much anymore with new generations, but I assume everyone here, when we were recording Christmas specials on old VHS tapes,
kept the ads in.
We would have the ads in because it was too much of a hassle to try to edit them out on the fly or to
right.
get yourself an editing bay. So you just sort of left them in, and really wasn't worth fast-forwarding them. So you'd watch the same old Christmas commercials over and over again, and it became part... There's a joke in MST3K about the Charlie Brown Christmas special and about how the commercials were being confused with the actual content.
Oh, right, the Dolly Madison and the...
yeah, take out the Dolly Madison, the whole special is like 8 minutes long.
Well, you know, when South Park did their all sort of... They did an entire episode that was Mr. Hanke's Christmas Classics, and it was just them doing various new and classic Christmas carols. They kept in these weird bumpers of a local newsman talking about fighting the Frizzies. And,
oh, yeah.
And that was actually because of the popular bootleg of the Star Wars holiday special that was going around had been from some local TV station where that was the bumper that would happen every time they would come back from commercial. And so they reenacted it for the South Park
thing. I never saw that version of that bootleg. That's hilarious.
Me neither. But I read somewhere that's what that joke was about.
That's amazing. Uh-huh.
But, you know, and you know, Dave and I are a touch older than you guys, and I didn't have a VCR until I was in high school.
Right.
And so for me, the repetition just came from them being on, not just on Christmas specials, but just on in December, mm-hmm. and then, like, on over and over and over again, December after December after December, and they just kind of take hold.
And again, a lot of these commercials are for things that are perennial. So you know, like the M&M, we're not going to talk about it, I think, on this one, but there's that M&M commercial
right.
where the M&Ms are leaving cookies out for Santa, and Santa's like, oh, the M&Ms are real. Like, M&Ms are still the same. You don't need to change that commercial. You can just keep bringing that sucker back.
Oh, please. I see now, again, here's where my being older comes in. I remember the old M&Ms ads that were to the tune of Deck the Halls. M&M's,
oh,
you know.
No.
Yeah, and that got very earwormy because they took a song you already knew and already associated with the holiday and then slapped a brand on it. And actually, two of my choices of commercials play that card and do it very successfully.
Nice.
So what we've done here is each of us have selected three of our favorite Christmas commercials. We all could have picked a longer list if we wanted
yes.
to, but a dozen is Christmassy.
It's the 12 ads of Christmas.
Ah! And we're just going to go around, I guess, one after another, just alternate?
Sure.
Okay.
We'll take turns.
Who wants to get us started? Wants to be the 12 Lords of Leaping? Who's Lords of Leaping?
I think that I picked maybe the oldest commercial of the crop, so I'll start with that one.
Okay.
There was a company, might still be around, but they certainly don't advertise the way they used to, called Andre. It was a New York-based vineyard.
No, they're California.
Oh, they're California? Yeah. Okay.
They are still in existence.
Okay. Well, then, see, you've done more research
than
I have.
I've done my research for this episode.
Did you drink the wine?
No.
Yeah, there are limits. So every Christmas as a kid, they would do these ads that were done to the tune of the Carol of the Bells.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so, it permeated so much that, I mean, anytime you would hear a ding or a clinging sound or like two glasses hitting, the kids my age would always reference Andre because of this ad. And so here...
For the holidays.
For the holidays. So here's a bit of that commercial.
Ring in the holidays. Ring out the year. Sparkling with Andre. Love and good cheer. Take Andre home for the holidays. Andre for the holidays.
What's a celebration without Andre champagne to lend sparkle and elegance? And Andre Cold Duck to keep things bubbling along. Greet the season and your friends with the best. Andre.
For the holidays and all year long.
So yeah, this ad is before my time. Whitney, is it before yours as well?
No, I don't.
So this was my first actual exposure to this ad. And yeah, all of these ads are available on YouTube. You can go scope them out if you want to watch them in addition to listening to them. But this ad was really, really weird for me because it's basically just people clinking glasses of champagne together.
Yes.
Cool. And then the majority of it is just still photographs.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
1970s party. Every photograph looked like someone's last known photograph.
Yeah.
Every photograph was just like, and he never made it home.
Well, it doesn't help that it's Carol of the Bells, which could easily be a Halloween hymn.
Yeah.
It's like in a minor key. It's kind of a spooky tune.
When I try to remember the theme from The Exorcist, I sometimes accidentally default to Carol of the Bells.
True. Tubular Bells, they're all the same.
Tubular Carol of the Bells.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
My favorite thing about this ad is the still photograph of the turkey being carved.
Yes.
And the legs, the drumsticks, have those little paper crowns on them at the end.
Why do people always do that? Was that just for aesthetics?
It's to cover the bone. The bone reminds us.
It's so that you don't have to think about the fact that you're about to eat
a carcass.
You're about to eat the skeleton of a bird.
Back when Christmas had shame.
Yeah.
Do kids still do the wishbone? Because that was always a really weird, brutal tradition.
I remember the wishbone. We used to do the wishbone. I don't know if
my corpse is ever plundered for the meat, I hope they find a bone within my body and make a wish on it before they break it in half.
Well, there's no wishbone in a tofurkey. I know that much for sure.
You could shove one in there.
The educational thing for me about these Andre ads was I had never heard of cold duck before.
Yeah, that one was weird to me. I didn't know there's one bottle and it's like pink and it's called cold duck.
Yes.
And I was like, I assumed it was just pink champagne. Is it different?
I finally looked it up. Yes. According to Wikipedia, the recipe was based on a German legend involving Prince Clemens Wenceslaus of Saxony.
Before he was king.
Exactly. Ordering the mixing of all the dregs of unfinished wine bottles with champagne. The wine produced was given the name Kaltes Ende, cold end in German, until it was altered to the similar sounding term Kalte Ente, meaning cold duck. The exact recipe now varies, but the original combined one part of Moselle wine, one part Rhine wine, and one part of champagne seasoned with lemons and balm mint.
So it's like fancy grog.
Basically, it's like you're mixing the dregs together and then throwing some champagne in to spruce them up.
It sounds fine. But,
yeah. It sounds awful.
You could do worse.
It is currently just a mix of red wine and champagne.
Ah.
Do you guys drink Glug? Glogg. That you can find it, like R.W. Knudsen puts out a non-alcoholic variety, but it's like a mulled spiced wine.
Oh, I have not. If we ever get to go to the Christmas markets of Europe, which I long to do one of these years,
on a Viking River cruise,
exactly, then I will have all the hot spiced wine, boozy, whatever things they have at those markets because it's going to be frickin' cold.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, anything else you want to add before we move on?
It was the golden age of an ad for booze being a kind of thing that kids would memorize.
Well, I'm all again reminded of MST3K, of the essay about Christmas parties past.
Oh, right. Well, and part of the idea behind Schoolhouse Rock was apparently one of these ad guys like heard kids singing a beer jingle verbatim, and they were like, okay, so kids will learn a thing if you set it to music, and there we go. Bibbs, what do you got?
Okay, so my first pick is a classic commercial I remember watching all the time when I was a kid, and it was the very first thing I thought of when we talked about what are our favorite Christmas commercials. The other thing I thought about was a chapter in Alonzo's book.
No.
You have an entire chapter in Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas about A Christmas Carol.
Yes.
And one of the things you've talked about on, I think, multiple occasions is who was the ultimate Ebenezer Scrooge, like on film.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's the Ebenezer Scrooge and the Honey Nut Cheerios commercial.
1986, I think.
Yeah, so just to say, we'll play the commercial in a
bold
second.
Bold choice.
But, like, it looks real. It looks like a real movie. They did some good production design. It looks like Scrooge's office from any decent production you've ever seen, and Scrooge is eating his Cheerios, and then the Honey Nut Cheerios bee is just like, but Mr. Scrooge,
he hasn't eaten the Cheerios yet. He's just doing his paperwork.
The bee gives it to him.
The bee gives him the Cheerios.
Is the bee Bob Cratchit?
The bee is wearing the Bob Cratchit hat, so I think the bee is Bob Cratchit.
Okay.
And the bee is just like, you need to eat these Cheerios, and Mr. Scrooge is just like, the customary rule will suffice. Let's give it a listen.
Food fan.
The taste of nuts and honey, Mr. Scrooge.
Ah! Come back. There are things to do.
Oh, Mr. Scrooge, Honey Nut Cheerios, it's Christmas.
My customary rule will suffice, thank you.
Yeah, but Honey Nut Cheerios blends golden honey and crunchy nuts.
Listen, don't you say honey and nuts?
It's a money
Merry Christmas, Mr. Scrooge.
Okay, so I used to love this commercial a lot when I was a kid, and I still think it's a fun commercial. But as an adult, it kind of ticks me off because I think this commercial thinks the problem with Ebenezer Scrooge is he isn't getting enough nutrition. I think he has other problems. That
he has not experienced sense pleasure yet. He is a little too obsessed with his numbers.
I agree.
Yeah, he hasn't put anything in his mouth that gives him that bliss.
In this ad, the bee is not only Bob Cratchit, but he is the ghost of Christmas Present, trying to get Ebenezer Scrooge to embrace life and all of its beautiful tastes.
And instead of having a room full of, you know, great joints of meat and barrels of oysters, he has a bowl of honey nuts.
Cold cereal.
Which is very reasonable. Okay, I can. You know what? You actually just sold me on it once again. Now
I do admire the ad for not turning, for one spoonful of cereal, not turning Scrooge into like a heel clicking, you know, gadabout.
just smiling, enjoying his cereal.
Yeah. And then the chorus pipes in with the jingle.
It's a hobby of an old.
And we should also give a shout out to Arnold Stang, who played the bee like for decades.
Arnold Stang.
Oh, no kidding!
Yeah.
Oh, the great Arnold Stang.
Yeah. The other thing about this commercial that I was really thinking about when I was watching it recently was when the bee goes, "But Mr. Scrooge, Honey Nut Cheerios, it's Christmas!" You know?
It's
like Jesus ate. Like, it's been part of our tradition for so long. You have to eat Honey Nut Cheerios at Christmas.
Well, at our church, that's what we take in instead of bread for communion. We just have a little shot of Honey Nut Cheerios.
Did you say honey? Nice.
That was part of that.
Would go from door to door asking for wassail and Honey Nut Cheerios.
Take this, it is my body. Crispy, crunchy, honey, and nutty for you.
Nut and honey.
But you're right, that was like part of the thing.
That was part of their ad campaign, was the bee would approach various characters in popular culture and offer them, like, you have some cereal. No, I will not have your cereal. When he mentions that it is honey and nuts.
That was the
turning point. It's like, wait a minute, honey and nuts, you say? And then they try it. Yeah. I remember there was another one along the same lines with Godzilla, where Godzilla was... he was subtitled, but yeah. And the bee would offer Honey Nut Cheerios to stock footage of Godzilla. And Godzilla ate the Honey Nut Cheerios and ceased rampaging immediately.
I completely forgotten about that until you said that. That's really funny.
All right, Dave White.
Oh, it's me. We're not going around the circle.
Well, I think we're alternating.
We're zigging and zagging.
Yeah. Zigzag.
All right. Well, in the late 1960s, all the way through to the 80s, Norelco would begin an ad with Jingle Bells. And the Norelco Santa riding on a sled made of razor heads down a hill happily. Like, he's coming up over the hill. He could not be happier. He didn't have a care in the world. He's riding on his razor, his electric razor sled with the three rotating heads. And he's got a lot of Norelco gifts for you to give to everyone in your family. You can give the triple head razor. You can give the Lady Norelco.
The Lady Norelco.
Which, let me tell you something, gentlemen. You ever give a woman in your life the Lady Norelco, she's leaving you. Because here's the message that sends. Honey, you really should shave your legs.
You hairy beast.
Could be her armpits, come on.
I didn't sign on for a Yeti.
Do we need to hear a little bit about it? Hear a little bit of it? Or
oh,
first,
I think we do.
Before I tell you why it's so great.
Let's do it.
Here's the Norelco Santa with some new ways to say Merry Christmas. Give the Norelco rechargeable triple header or the triple header with a cord. Give the inexpensive flip top 20 or the new cordless. And say Merry Christmas to the ladies with a Lady Norelco or the new home beauty salon, Norelco. Even our name says Merry Christmas.
Here's why it's so great. Not only is it gorgeously joyful stop motion animation when Santa comes bounding over the hill and he leaves a little trail in the snow, and when I was a kid,
shaving the snow,
nothing made me happier than the thought of like being on a ride that was on a track, you know. And so that was kind of what Santa looked like he was having, and I wanted to have that. Also, at six, this commercial promised shaving.
An experience you'll get to have someday.
And when you're six, you're thinking, I want to shave. Because what did you do when you were six? There were four men in this room. What did you do when you were 6 years old? You'd go in the bathroom and you would want to shave with your dad while he was shaving. Your dad had a beard.
My dad, not only did my dad have a beard, I never saw him without a beard
right.
when he was alive.
Yeah.
I only ever saw two pictures of him as an adult without a beard. Hmm. And one of them was when he was in the Marines. So he had a beard and he kind of forgot to teach me how to shave. And that's why I have a beard. Every time I try to shave, I know I'm doing it wrong. To the point, and this is true, because these Norelco commercials, they would remake them every year or every few years, and
yeah.
they'd be slightly updated with new products.
Slightly updated with new products.
New visual effects. When I was a kid, the Santa looked a little bit crisper, but whatever.
Did you see... Now, the clip I sent around to you guys was a collection of them.
Yeah, we only played the clip from the first...
Well, there was one that comes up a little later
yeah.
in the 80s, and the announcer... You see a picture of this Norelco product, and the announcer says, you know, because he's saying, give this, give that, give this iron, give this coffee maker, give a blood pressure meter.
That is a practical gift.
That is one step lower than giving the ladybug the
Norelco. You're killing me.
Now, if you nick yourself while you're shaving, and also you're hemophiliac, I suppose.
And the guy, there's later on in the run of these ads, there's one where the woman gives the guy his razor, and he says, "Oh, this is great." it was the first take, and they just let it go. And the look in his face is like, "Sure, fine, whatever."
I love, in addition to the stop motion visual of the ad, I've always been enamored of the sort of let's make a Christmas pun out of our own company name.
Noelco.
Yeah. Even our name says Merry Christmas.
That's right.
Anyway,
it's like Knott's Scary Farm and Knott's Merry Farm.
For instance, they
would change the name around the holidays.
But I'm 100% serious about this. This is going to sound like a stupid joke, but it's true. When I was a kid and I would see the Norelco commercials, because we never had razors in the house, like especially the electric razors, that was not a thing. There was not necessary. No one had those. I was really hazy on how it worked. And I thought he was just on some weird super sled. With like weird hover jacks or something in the bottom. It looked like a sci-fi sled. So I was like, oh, I want a cool sled like they can afford if you work for Norelco. Anyway, back to these shavers. Like I was
That was actually a coming of age moment for me in my house, because all the men in my family used Norelco shavers when they shaved, and when I was old enough to shave, I was given one.
Oh.
But then
Have like the Saw's family on it or something?
No. Okay. But given how it left my face feeling, it might as well have, because it left me just really kind of raw and
red.
Oh, yeah.
Here's the ugly secret of those Norelco shavers.
Yeah.
They mangle your face.
Ripped the hair
right at your face.
I never figured out how this was like three circular razors in like a pyramid. I'm like, it looked wrong.
My dad was really looking forward to teaching me how to shave, and my mom and dad were divorced. I was raised by my mom.
He did.
I didn't start getting hair until I was around 14, but he was really looking forward to my adolescence because he wanted to teach me how to shave. And when I was 15, I was traveling with my mom. My dad was back in America, and. I was in utter denial about the state of my facial hair. It was like greasy and stringy and completely gross, the way adolescents get.
That teen mustache.
And everyone said, you should need to shave, and I was totally arrogant. No, I don't need to shave. This is not real anything. It looked horrible. I've seen pictures of it. It looks terrible. And as such, when it finally came time for my first shave, I was on the road. I was on an army base in Germany at the time. So I paid a German army guy to give me my first shave. I had a professional shave the very first time. My dad was crushed that he did not get to give me. So
you poor guy.
About 2 years later, when I was a senior in high school and actually had like proper whiskers at that point, my dad decided to give me an electric razor for the first time.
Right.
And I learned the sad truth about them... thinking it was going to be, you know, clean and safe and comfortable and just feeling that ripping sensation as I pressed one of those things to my cheek.
Actual pain.
Mm. Yes.
Whoever convinced the world that in order to be presentable, you need to, like, shove a knife into your face just to look nice.
The same people that convinced women they had to do it to their legs and underarms.
Yeah, like, ridiculous. Yeah. Come on.
Women have more surface area. Men have it on their faces. We both have it bad.
I'm covered in hair.
Yeah, but
you're
not shaving your legs on
it. I know, and thank goodness. I'm just saying, it's unfair. People shouldn't have to do that.
Moving on, Whitney, what's your first one?
This is one that my sister and I sang to one another on the regular, just like the beer commercials that we repeated, and it was something we coveted endlessly because of this ad. Hallmark in the mid-80s began marketing a Christmas mascot that you could get if you like purchase a certain dollar amount in their products, and will throw in Rodney Reindeer for free, or Rodney Reindeer for an additional $1.99. Rodney Reindeer was also, I think, a Burger King toy.
A couple years later, yeah.
And it was the 12 Days of Christmas just singing about all the characters in this rather unusual Rodney Reindeer canon that Hallmark attempted to introduce.
There was Rhonda.
Uh-huh.
And Rodney.
Ramona.
There was Rocky, I think.
Ramona pops up, and Rocky...
Randy.
Randy.
They pop up later. Like, a couple... The ad you picked is from 85, and then I found a Burger King ad from 87 where Ramona and Randy are thrown in as well.
Mm-hmm. Let's give a listen to the original, gentlemen.
On the first day of Christmas, I left the Hallmark store
with a stuffed toy named Rodney Reindeer.
On the next day, I bought Rhonda, and then I added more.
Now five, do the song before, dance with Rhonda.
Hallmark, thank you.
Three puppy toys, two girls and boys, one more for the treat, and a stuffed toy named Rodney Reindeer.
Give Rodney and Rhonda Reindeer this Christmas. They're only at Hallmark.
Yeah,
there it is. No memory of this until I watched it, and then I had every memory of this. We had those. No. They were really cool. They had like their like hooves were full of sands, and they would hang on things.
Yeah, I've seen them, but I didn't know they had a name. I didn't know they were a phenomenon.
They came along after you and I were adults.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And they were, or at least mid-teenage years.
Yeah.
And so I missed it in terms of like that childhood obsession. So I was watching this commercial just with, you know, different eyes. And this commercial is the story of a man who haunts a Hallmark store. Because the guy who comes out of the Hallmark store in the beginning is the one singing the song. And he talks about how he went on one day to buy Rodney. Mm. Then he just had to go back.
And get all the other
and
members.
Buy Rhonda. And then he went back again.
For
and
multiple
again
Rodneys
to
and
get
Rhondas.
More and more and more. Okay. And they encourage you in this commercial to buy a lot of them and to just keep coming back to Hallmark and keep buying more
Rhonda. And they have barely bothered to create a narrative for these characters. That's the
no,
thing.
There's none.
You're just supposed to have a bunch of
featureless product.
Yeah.
Barely designed. You know, it just because
very looks, simple.
Like Beanie Babies have more personality.
It looks like an Aardman, like an early Aardman character.
You can project all of your.
Deliberately had those like little beady dead eyes, no mouth.
Yeah, you can project all of your reindeer fantasies onto it.
Oh, and I did.
Yeah,
we had them when I was a kid, and like it was just big enough and just sturdy enough that we actually ended up segueing it into an ornament, and it would just hang on a branch of a reasonably sturdy Christmas tree.
Well, then they started making the ornaments.
Well, this was before. Yeah, like, I had the
and the Burger King
thing.
Toys and cross stitch patterns, stickers.
The dolls came in different sizes too. Like there was one that was like kind of palm size. That was the popular one they gave out at the store. You could get like one you could lay on. There were big ones.
So now you were obsessed with the ad. Did you buy them or no?
Did you ever get one?
I never got one, but somehow made it into our house. Like at some point, like it just sort of snuck in on its own.
That guy from the ad.
Conjuring spin-off. We never went on any sort of like particular pilgrimage to go get a Rodney Reindeer, but we did have one. And for years, like 3, 4, 5 years in a row, my sister and I, every time we walked past it, would sing in unison the Rodney Reindeer jingle. And it wasn't until years later that I started asking questions. What is Rodney? Is he like, does he work with Santa? Is he, you know, does he pal around at the North Pole? Does he wish he palled around at the North Pole?
Is he a second tier reindeer?
Is he just some Finnish character that, you know, wanders the landscape and steals your chestnuts? You know, I don't know what he is.
The ultimate question, of course, is Where's Rodney?
Oh, God.
Oh, God.
Where's Rodney?
That's a cancel too soon shout out if you missed that episode.
It was an episode about a kid who, when he was like feeling socially awkward, could summon Rodney Dangerfield from wherever Rodney Dangerfield happened to be at the time, and Rodney would be suddenly in this kid's bedroom giving him advice, and he'd teleport out of there.
Never made it past the pilot, shockingly enough.
Lonzo, could you pause the podcast? I need some words with William right now.
All right. Well, so speaking of ads that that force you to become earworms by using recognizable Christmas carols, I also went that route with my second one, this Sprite commercial from the late 70s. In case you're wondering what the word Lyman means, for a very long time, it was a portmanteau created by the Coca-Cola company to describe the flavor of Sprite in that it was lemon and lime, hence Lyman.
Yeah, we couldn't wrap our heads around it otherwise. Thanks,
yeah,
Coke.
I know, really.
They had a very particular visual. It was a piece of fruit that was green,
half green, half yellow. You're right. And there were like leaves coming out of the bottle cap of the bottle.
It was a brilliant move.
Yes, definitely. If you can invent a new word, you're onto something. So anyway, take a Lyman and cram it into Good King Wenceslas, and the results are this.
Lime and lemon, taste of Sprite, joins your celebrations. The taste of lime and mixes right on holiday occasions. Sprite makes brighter holidays. Lime is the reason. Sprite goes well so many ways to make a cheer this season.
This is another one that's before my time.
Mm.
I love this commercial because that's another one where it's like, again, feels like kind of like
adults almost, celebrating.
Almost a trailer for a horror movie, like just the way it looks. But like, the thing I love about it is there's this one bit where they've just taken like 8 2-liter bottles of Sprite and they're just poured it all into a bowl and they've delicately lined the bowl with slices of lime. And I'm like, really?
It's going to be flat real soon.
Really? Who's going in there like, ooh, they got the Sprite bowl?
I mean, unless
your keys, honey.
Well, unless we miss the part where they put all the gin in the bowl first or something. You know, that might explain it.
You guys probably remember some of these from the 70s because my grandmother had one, but there were entire cookbooks that encourage you to cook with 7-Up.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I've seen them online. I didn't have them, but I've seen them online. Like soak, you know, baste your roast in 7-Up.
Yeah.
I know roast basted in Dr. Pepper.
Sure. Yeah, no. I mean, you know, when you're making a ham, like,
just the sugars in that Coca-Cola, will do just fine.
Yeah, that's perfectly adequate. What was it about this commercial that stuck with you? Because I don't hear this one talked about a lot.
Just because, again, like in the way that I can't hear Carol of the Bells without thinking of Andre, I can't hear Good King Wenceslas without thinking about Lyman.
I like the line in the song that suggests that all of Christmas,
oh, that's true,
is about this flavor.
Lyman is the reason.
Lyman is the reason, they say. And at that time in the commercial, you cut to a woman standing under a mistletoe and a guy sort of like near her. And I'm sort of like, oh, this is the threat of mistletoe at this party.
No, you don't understand. That was Mary and Joseph. That was how they met. She was under a mistletoe. And he, fortunately for him, he just popped a Lyman. So it was like, really tasted good, that kissing.
Please don't ever say popped a Lyman again. Sounds like really horrendous sexual slang.
It's just, not just Good King Wenceslas. If I hear somebody talking about, oh, well, the reason for the season, you know, I think, oh, isn't Lyman
is the
reason?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's just, it stayed with me forever.
Lyman was spelled L-I-M-O-N, which is...
L-Y-M-O-N.
Was it?
Yes.
Was it?
Well, because
Lyme disease?
Well, because they didn't...
Limon?
Well, they didn't want to look like lime in Spanish, so yeah, it was L-Y-M-O-N.
Yeah.
But this is before Lyme disease was a thing. That's probably why they don't use Lyman anymore. Not really the kind of connection they wanted.
All right, so for my next commercial, this is a commercial that I'm pretty sure made my mom cry once when my brother went off to the Marines and, you know, he missed him. And, they would show this commercial every year for a while that I could remember.
Quite a while. This was this was an annual.
It was a perennial.
Yeah.
It's from Folgers Crystals. It's a somewhat longer commercial than some of the others. It's a narrative. It's got a real story, and honestly, it's good storytelling. If like, you wanted to show someone like how to tell a story in like a really short amount of time and sell a product, you could do a hell of a lot worse than this Folgers Crystals commercial. Let's take a listen.
Thanks a lot. Merry Christmas.
Wishes for this and all your mornings from Folgers.
So, you got this wonderful house. It's like all decked out for Christmas. You got this wholesome, very white family. And you've got, it's Peter, right?
Peter has come Peter's home. Home. For Christmas.
They never explain why Peter was gone. Now,
he's clearly the prodigal son.
See, I assumed he was in prison. Like, he'd been on a furlough for Christmas. And that's why no one was up, no one stayed up for him. It was just like, no.
Weren't expecting him.
They were not.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think they'd be really disappointed. That's why he had to, like, grease the wheels with some Folgers Crystals. Like, we should be mad, but he did.
His coffee is so good. Maybe he was a draft dodger in Canada.
I think he's estranged from his father, and here's why I think this. The little girl is ecstatic. So is the mom. But the dad just shakes his hand. And I'm like, God. If you were really happy to see your son, you'd hug him.
Mm-hmm. Peter's gay.
Perhaps.
Yes.
That could be it.
He's been living in San Francisco, now he's going to spend Christmas with the family.
Although that's... Is Folgers really that popular in San Francisco? Is it really like the hit?
It's popular everywhere.
Yes. Okay.
Oh yeah, drag queens do Mrs. Olsen all the time.
Fair enough. Like I there's this weird thing, like every once in a while you'll see like some wholesome, you know, bit of marketing or whatever, mm-hmm. and you realize that either that's a lie or you've been missing out. And so I'm watching this and I'm just like, I've never been awoken by the smell of coffee. Like I've woken up and there's been the smell of coffee because my parents make me coffee.
Right.
But I've never heard someone just like pop the top of a Folgers and they go, is this the Christmas?
I have been awakened to the sound of cinnamon rolls in the oven, and that's pretty great.
Mm. That's pretty good. But I've never been awakened by an odor, and I realize that I'm missing out. There's this magical thing we're all supposed to have at Christmas. I've never had it.
Didn't you ever like incorporate an odor into a dream you were having?
No.
Coffee, like you're being chased by the lizard man again. All of a sudden, he's drinking a cup of coffee.
I don't have olfactory dreams. Maybe I'm weird. I don't know.
I think actually the thing with the dad is that like this was still an era where men didn't hug.
Mm. Yeah, stiff upper lipmanship.
Do we think?
I suspect. Weird. You know, nowadays they would, but this was
weird.
It was a different time. Dave,
I started to watch this ad and I thought, and I'm surprised nobody chose the creepy incest commercial.
I thought about that one.
It's also a Folgers ad.
The brother and sister are too excited to see each other.
Well, the sister puts up, like, she opens a gift and has that little adhesive bow and like very romantically leans forward and unexpectedly sticks it on his shoulder.
Boop.
And he looks up, like, kind of taken aback, and she in what is undoubtedly a sexual fashion says, "You're my present this year."
Yeah.
And it's
it's a little disturbing.
And you know
these two are having an affair, and it's been sent up like Funny or Die did, like a straightforward they're having an incestuous affair thing. So I was shocked to find that it was just Pete. It's like just Peter. There's no incest here. Why are you? What a dull ad, sir.
1978.
Mm-hmm.
It was Christmas Eve in McDonaldland.
Oh, God.
And all the people who live in McDonaldland, all the characters, Mayor McCheese, the Hamburglar, the Grimace, Captain Crook, they all live in the same house with Ronald.
It's a commune.
Yeah.
A so McCommune.
They live in the mayoral mansion if Mayor McCheese is
there.
Oh,
could be. That's a good point, yeah.
They all live in the same house.
Mm-hmm. Corruption.
They're all asleep. They're all wearing stocking caps.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's how you know they're asleep.
Because it's 1978, but they don't have central heat in their house, so they all have to wear a stocking cap. Do y'all know the reason stocking caps are long?
No.
No.
Well, you wore them in the olden times because it was cold in your house. Like, you'd leave the fire going.
But it would die out.
But sometime. It would die out, and it'd be like, 40 degrees in your house by the morning. No central heat. And the length of it was meant to act as a scarf.
Oh.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Again, I did a lot of research about why everyone in McDonaldland would have on a stocking cap.
In your research, did you figure out what a Grimace is supposed to be?
He's a chicken McNugget.
He's a purple chicken McNugget.
He's a big purple McNugget. That's what I've always thought.
He predates the chicken McNugget.
Well, that's true.
In McDonald mythos.
I always assumed like if you were to slice Grimace in half, he'd just be like soft white meat all the way through. That's how I always picture it. I don't know.
Grimace is...
Does he have a wishbone?
Hold on.
Grimace is a proto-fetish gainer. Before we even knew it had a name.
Trying to get that Chevy Chaser market into McDonald's.
Grimace had, secret partners on the side who were all like, eat for mommy, He got real big on McDonald's food. And he was so happy he was the Grimace.
Anyway, is that why it's called Grimace?
Well, that's the thing. A Grimace is an unhappy facial expression, and he's always smiling.
He's always so happy.
And we never let Dave actually finish setting up the commercials so we can play it for people.
Well,
so
Ron, okay.
It's Christmas in McDonaldland.
Play the bit, and then we'll explain.
It was Christmas Eve in McDonaldland. Everyone was asleep except Ronald, who had other plans. Out of his bed, he silently crept.
Cuckoo! What are you doing, Ronald?
Shh. I'm giving McDonald's gift certificates to all my friends.
So Hamburglar can get a hamburger.
And Grimace.
Duh, is it Christmas yet?
Not yet.
Grimace can get a shake.
Christmas.
Captain Crook, fillet of fish.
And the mayor. He'd get a cheeseburger.
So to the chimney Ronald did reach.
You can get them at McDonald's, 50 cents each.
When suddenly, bright light shined in his eyes, Ronald turned around, amazed and surprised.
Hi, guys. I make too much noise?
Merry Christmas, Ronald!
All his friends had a present for him.
McDonald's gift certificates for me?
Aw, gee. And a Merry Christmas to all of you from all of us at McDonald's.
Merry Christmas!
Okay, so Ronald McDonald has gotten everybody McDonald's
gift
certificates.
The world's greatest gift.
They live in McDonaldland. I presume they all work for McDonald's.
That's correct.
And then they all give him McDonald's.
It's like, yes,
dude, they owe their soul to the company store.
It's like reverse Gift of the Magi, where no one actually needs the thing that they have been given.
Except.
And they're all giving it to each other.
Except hamburger.
Well, only if he's trying to go straight. He could just steal those burgers if he wants to.
Well, but like, why wouldn't he just... You have the gift certificate, you might as well use that, too.
I suppose, but he's already got a pretty good burgling gig.
Hamburglar is merely a compulsive thief. He doesn't have to steal them because he lives in McDonaldland with all the McDonaldland characters. They get to eat all the McDonald's food they want.
Maybe
aren't some of them McDonald's food, though, like Fry Guys?
Well, they aren't in the house, though, you'll notice. Maybe this is a long con intervention for the Hamburglar. None of them really need the gift certificates, but it's really all just an excuse to give him the gift certificates so that he won't steal anymore.
Okay, two things that are very important to me about this commercial. First of all, when I was a child, all I wanted were McDonald's gift certificates. I will tell you why. they made them so appealing as a gift, right? They were Christmas. They were decorated as Christmas little cards almost.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Were they foil stamped even bits?
And they would come in a book, a whole book of them for $5. Now, let me tell you something. When I was 6 years old in 1970, $5 was an F-ton of money. Okay,
that was several McDonald's
especially
meals.
That was several
visits to McDonald's. And also, as a child in 1970, I was eating at home all the time. McDonald's was a special treat. It wasn't a drive-through, you know, we're in a hurry to soccer practice, let's just get something fast. Like, the children who live now, do not understand that fast food used to simply be a treat. Mm. It wasn't a daily or weekly occurrence. Mm. And so I would dream of being taken to McDonald's when I was six. Like, it just seemed like the happiest place on earth. There was no Disneyland near me. I lived in the far Northeast.
And so, watched Mac and Me, I thought every McDonald's was supposed to have a dance party all the
exactly.
time.
Exactly.
And we always just missed it, so we have to go to McDonald's. Like, you just missed it. Like, Ronald's not here today. He's not. It's on a shift.
I must have, although I have no memory of this, I was a very talkative child. And I must have begged and begged and begged my parents to give me McDonald's gift certificates for Christmas, even though it wasn't like I could get there on my own, and it wasn't like I was expected to pay for it when I got there anyway, but they got them for me anyway and put them in my Christmas stocking, and I was ecstatic.
I bet your parents were ecstatic, too, because like it's such a simple, like, you can make your kid happy with so little. It's like, I remember when I was in college, my mom asked me, what do you want for Christmas this year? And I actually said socks. It's like her heart exploded in joy. She said, finally, it's happened.
Also,
it finally paid off.
There's something about McDonald's gift certificates, though. It's also like a child's first agency.
Yes.
Because you get to go up by yourself and order for yourself and pay for yourself.
Yeah. Exactly. And then my favorite aesthetic point in the commercial is when Ronald accidentally wakes up Grimace while delivering the gift certificate to Grimace, and Grimace sits bolt upright in bed and says, "Is it Christmas yet?" And Ronald says, "No, not yet. Go back to sleep." And as he's going back to sleep, Grimace goes, "Oh, Christmas."
I was also surprised that as late as 1978, they were still using Mayor McCheese.
Yeah.
Because they got sued by Sid and Marty Krofft.
They did?
Yeah, for copying the Puffin Stuff design.
It looks like Puffin Stuff.
And at some point,
Mayor McCheese was around when I was a kid in the 80s.
Well, at some point, they phased him out because they lost that lawsuit.
I played inside of a Mayor McCheese play place. Like, I've crawled around inside his head, and that was the 1980s. So, I'll say this. I grew up watching the McDonaldland characters, and they always baffled me. I didn't understand what McDonaldland was. But I did have my Ronald. And this wasn't my Ronald. This was a different actor.
This is an earlier Ronald. Yeah. Yeah, our Ronald from the 80s was...
Yeah.
I
looked up their names. Okay. King Moody was Ronald McDonald from 75 to 80. Five.
Oh, I see.
So by the time I started like really paying attention to McDonald's commercials, it was Squire Friedel. He was the one who was in Mac and Me.
Yeah, Squire Friedel was good.
Yeah,
was
and good. And I think he had the longest run as Ronald McDonald. So if there is one official one,
it's that one.
Mine.
Yeah.
Squire Friedel.
I have two more thoughts on this. Mm. One is I've been scouring my head. No memory of Captain Crook.
He was the filet of fish guy.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. That was not a thing when I was a kid.
He was the least popular of all.
Yeah.
And I can imagine.
He was like the Jean Lafitte.
They phased him out and brought in the little
chicken. Oh, Birdie.
The little Birdie was the chicken McNugget girl
I felt guilty eating Birdie.
Well, and remember the goblin? What happened to the goblins?
The fry guys.
No, but before there were the French fry eating goblins, and then they were replaced by the fry guys that were talking fries, weren't they?
I don't remember.
The other thing I want to say before we move on is I came this close to picking my own McDonald's commercial, which was the one where all the kids are skating, And
are they really cool?
They're really are they wearing neon
pink?
No. It was really lame. It was like it's a Wonderful Life, kind of wholesome.
Oh.
And what was weird is that they had animated animals looking at them. But then there was this one really little kid who didn't know how to skate, and then the kids are skating with him. And then Ronald McDonald teaches him how to skate, and then it's freaking magical. I forgot you guys aren't allowed to swear. it's so like, oh, it's so nice. It's Christmas. What does this have to do to McDonald's? I don't know. Let's get some fries. Like, it was just, it was sweet.
Okay, wait, I'm sorry. I'm finding fascinating things here. The Grimace was introduced as the evil Grimace.
Yeah, it was a different color and he had four arms.
He was depicted with two pairs of arms, which was used to steal sodas and shakes. Evil was soon dropped and he was reintroduced as a protagonist.
Wow.
There are protagonists and antagonists in the world of hamburgers. Eat a hamburger.
Bernie was not there for the McNuggets. She was for the breakfast because she was the early bird.
The McNuggets were, there were anthropomorphic McNuggets.
You're right. You're
with
right,
little
you're
faces
right.
on
yeah.
them.
Okay. The professor I'd forgotten about. Officer Big Mac. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the Fry Kids were originally introduced as the Goblins with two B's because they were goblins.
All right,
Whitney, take us to the home stretch.
Well, you were talking about Ronald McDonald sort of being there and not really hawking any of his products, and I'm going to go to 2015 for my next ad, which comes from Apple and features nothing to do with Apple whatsoever.
There's
an iPhone in there.
A little bit, but you know, this could take place in Dickens times and it would not change too much. Mm. Up on a hill, far away from a village, in a frozen cabin, lives a lonely Frankenstein's monster.
You can just call him Frankenstein.
This is a Christmas ad. And he's dejected by his community and has been completely ostracized.
And has a fire in the fireplace, I should point out.
Mm. He got used to it over time.
Hey, I just am saying.
How many Frankensteins does it take to light a torch? made that one up myself. I'm very proud of myself. This Frankenstein's monster has solved his social problems. Because he runs on electricity, he can light Christmas lights. Not in any sort of dramatic fashion. He's not going to save Christmas. He's not going to light the tree in Rockefeller Center. But he is going to screw Christmas lights into his neck. Two of them.
Mm-hmm. And they glow.
And they glow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And with glowing Christmas lights equipped, he wanders into the town square in front of their giant communal Christmas tree and begins singing a hymn.
Let's have a listen.
Like home for the holidays. Okay.
Cause no matter how far away you roam, when you pine for the sunshine of the friendly days, for the holidays you can't be home, sweet home.
Ah, that's kind of nice.
It's not a hymn, technically.
Well, it's a Christmas song.
Yeah, definitely.
Partway through his song, one of his lights goes out, and that is the thing that makes the community turn on him. He kind of has them for a moment.
It's kind of like putting on the Ritz, you know.
Yeah.
You know what it is? I was watching this, and I'm like, this is Ron Howard's Grinch. They added that bit in the middle where the Grinch is almost accepted by the community, and then they turn on him because one of his neck lights don't work. Like, this is like a better version of Ron Howard's The Grinch, as indeed every version of everything
is better than Ron Howard's
The Grinch. Getting punched in the kidneys is better than Ron Howard's The Grinch.
Faith Hill singing Where Are You Christmas on the radio. I can't think of a Christmas song I hate more than that. Where Are You Christmas, it's a time. It's a time.
Where are you?
It's... When Taylor Momsen sings it, I can get away with it because she's a little kid. Faith Hill, you should know better.
Yeah, I was going to say, the version I hate more is the Taylor Momsen one.
Let's say you let Taylor Momsen get away from
it. She's a kid. She doesn't know from time.
Rip those fake teeth right out of her face.
Yes.
God.
And parsecs are not a division of time anyway.
But they covered that in Solo.
I got a little verklempt about the Frankenstein ad. I thought it was very sweet.
It seems a little illogical to me, though. That I don't know what Frankenstein's monster has to do with Christmas. The little girl helps him out. The actor they got to play Frankenstein is quite good. I'd love to see him in sort of a feature film as this tragic figure.
Well, I mean, the tagline of the ad is "Reach out to everybody" or something like that. And it's like, okay, I get it.
Frankenstein is famously ostracized.
Like, hug a pariah today, is what the ad is saying.
I think it's perfectly sweet. I like that they managed to, because there aren't a lot of Christmas horror commercials.
Well, this is true.
So this is actually kind of like a nice little dovetail, handout to Halloween, like we can show this on October 30th, it's okay.
I nearly chose a commercial for DirecTV from about a decade ago, which was, they had just recently acquired this big stable of horror movies, so it was Christmas hymns, but it was like Freddy Krueger was picking the mistletoe, and Hannibal Lecter was serving up the roast, and that one was really fun, and that was actually like genuinely horrific. This one leaves me a little bit baffled, because it's clearly trying to make me feel, but I'm not exactly sure what it's trying to make me feel.
Nice. Yeah, I too feel nothing at this commercial. Really? I also feel nothing. I also feel nothing at the Peter Comes Home for Folgers commercial.
Mm.
When the little girl comes up to Frankenstein and starts singing a song, my first thought was, throw her into a lake!
Yeah. Like, I know the relationship the Frankenstein monster has with little girls. This is not good for either of them.
Friend.
Theory. It's been 20, whatever, it's been a while since the Folgers commercial. Peter died, and he got turned into a Frankenstein. And now he has to do, and now it's even harder for him to reconnect.
To connect on the holidays.
So, like, he has to, like, go a little, he has to go the extra nine. Mm. He still has the Folgers, because that's how he, like, You avoid the smell, the corpse smell.
I see.
Yeah.
I thought that one was sweet, and I'm glad you picked it, Whitney, because I'd never seen it before.
Okay.
Now, it also kind of dovetails into this sort of, how recent are we going to say this genre is? The sort of lengthy, elaborate UK department store commercials that are designed to make you cry.
Well, the John Lewis ads, well, I'll be talking about one of them in a minute here. I think they came along in sort of the mid-2000s, mid to late 2000s.
Yeah.
There's a history of epic Christmas commercials. There's like a 3-minute Hallmark commercial.
Yeah, I say.
Even more weepy than the Folgers one.
If you watched, like, I just watched this year's Hallmark Hall of Fame presentation, and all the ads were Hallmark, and they were longer, and, you know, like, they would stake out, like, an entire commercial break and do one ad, you know, from stem to stern there. So, yeah, that's something that we do here as well. But the British department store ads have become kind of famous, and now thanks to YouTube, we in the United States can watch them as much as the people in the UK do. And so I picked one from a couple years ago from Marks & Spencer featuring actress... her name just flew right out of my head. The star of Tumbleweeds,
Janet McTeer.
Thank you, Janet McTeer.
Oh, is that Janet McTeer?
That's Janet McTeer.
I thought you looked familiar. Okay, cool.
As Mrs. Claus,
glamorous Mrs. Claus,
very much.
Yeah.
Any last minute requests?
No, no, just bills.
Ah! Hey, Mrs. Claus. My name is Jake, and I'm 6 years old. I have a big sister called Anna.
Jake. Stop taking my things!
I also have a dog called Tiger.
Jake, stop!
Darling, I'm sorry.
This Christmas, I need your help. Because I want something. And I know you can get it for me. You might think I don't like my sister very much, but I do.
I love her a lot.
So, how was your night?
Oh, you know, quiet.
So, you know, this is like, again, we're talking about, you know, the economy of storytelling of a commercial. You've got to cram all this stuff in there.
Even for a long commercial, this is still pretty tight.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think, you know, it tells a story and it gives you characters and it has a nice twist to it.
The twist is good. Like, at first I was just like, okay, and this is all going to come together. I like that I don't recall a lot of Christmas specials or stories in which the Christmas wish was literally just a gift for someone else.
Yeah.
Like, I know, like, Christmas, I want my family back together again for Christmas, or I want my dad not to be dead. But, like, just get my sister shoes.
Yeah, I want this thing for someone else.
That's
yeah.
really innocent and sweet, and I really like that. I am kind of bummed that Janet McTeer doesn't feel comfortable telling her husband right. that she did something part of his job. Like, he's clearly, if she told him,
William,
he would be freaked out.
Men.
Have you considered that he's doing her job, and he's just getting all the credit?
Yeah, I have considered that. That's crap. That's my point.
She's letting him believe that he's doing all the heavy lifting. Like, really.
Men have fragile egos, right. and, you yeah. know, she's just being considerate that way. Anyway, I love this ad. I love how chic it is. I love her as Mrs. Claus. Why is Janet McTeer not a bigger movie star in this country?
I don't know.
Like, she does a lot of stage.
Yeah.
Stuff.
But, like, I remember seeing her in Tumbleweeds and thinking, like, actress. Okay, well, she's our new, Meryl Streep or whatever.
I'm sorry, let's see her as Mrs. Claus in a movie. Let's give Mrs. Claus her own movie. I was just watching the Mystery Science Theater 3000, Santa Claus Conquers the Martian,
uh-huh.
and as I'm often wont to do when I'm watching something I've seen before, I'm just scrolling, looking things up online, and while I was looking up trivia for the film, that is apparently the first appearance of Mrs. Claus in a live-action anything.
Oh, wow.
That's weird.
Well, there was the, most famously probably the Angela Lansbury TV movie, Mrs. Santa Claus,
yeah,
with awesome. Songs by Jerry Herman.
Mrs. Claus does appear in The Christmas That Almost Wasn't.
No, Lord, yes, that's
no,
true.
Around, but I think, given, you're right, the Angela Lansbury one is a good one.
But yeah, she's not a protagonist very often.
But we could remake that with Janet right. here, or tell sure. another Mrs. Claus story. Mrs. Claus has all kinds of stuff. We have multiple movies about Jenny McCarthy as Santa's daughter. We can't have a couple more than Mrs. Claus, at least.
Well, this is the first time I've seen Mrs. Claus, like, reimagined. The Mrs. Claus I've always seen in, storybooks or TV specials or commercials is always that same sort of
dowdy Teutonic.
Yeah, dowdy old woman with, the bun in her hair.
She's
a
dumpling.
Yeah, pretty much. She's always wearing red gingham and always in the kitchen. And I've never even heard theories as to what she's up to, how she met this man.
There's some Hallmark movie
where was her life
where Mrs.
Claus
comes down and is like a nanny to a family and like fixes everything for them.
It's called Mary Poppins.
No, I don't think it's Mrs. Claus. You're thinking of the one with James Vanderbeek?
No, that's Mrs. Miracle.
Oh, okay, I was about to say.
No, there's one with Mrs. Claus.
Santa Claus is coming to town. She's the local school marm.
Right.
And then that hot ginger swaggers into town.
Mm-hmm. Well, she is also a hot ginger, if you'll recall.
Sweeps her off her feet.
She's a veritable Jessica Rabbit.
She is.
Mrs. Claus, when she's a younger school teacher.
She's played by Christina Hendricks.
It's also good casting.
There you go.
It's also really good casting.
All right, Bibbs, close it out. What
else
you
got? All right, let's see. My last one. This is weird that I've picked two commercials for cereal, and I've searched my heart, and I realized that cereal was way more important to me when I was a kid. I was
way too invested
in all these cereal commercials, and will the Cocoa Puffs bird ever solve his severe, mental illness issues, and will the Trix rabbit ever be allowed to eat the dang cereal?
The Trix rabbit.
Remember when they left that up to a vote, and the kids overwhelmingly voted, just let him have the cereal.
Let him have it.
Your horrible commercials.
Do you remember years later in the Got Milk era, where they bought the rights to the Trix rabbit? And there was a man slunk into this really seedy convenience store and bought a box of Trix, and they made fun of him. Those are for kids, He gets really obsessed, and he's kind of muttering to himself, everybody says they're for kids. Well, today, and he unzips his face, and it's the animated Trix rabbit inside of a human suit. He says, well, today they're for rabbits, and he grabs the milk, and he's out. It cuts to the tagline, got milk? Yeah.
Really, that's great. Yeah. And I do love some Cap'n Crunch Christmas Crunch, by the way.
There you go.
I look forward to it all
anything
year.
To get sucrose into kids' faces.
But what was weird is they always had these like commercial campaigns, which are always about like, your cereal is so cool, people want to steal it.
Mm.
People want to take it. The Lucky Charms guy wants to steal it. The Trix Rabbit wants to steal it. The Cocoa Puffs guy wants to run amok.
Yeah.
Like, take off his clothes in public and rub Cocoa Puffs all over. I don't know what he
did. He's cuckoo for them.
He was. It was not good. Or like, there was, of course, Golden Crisp was like, it was about the hero trying to rescue it.
Yep.
Previously Sugar Crisp.
But I was always fascinated by the Fruity Pebbles commercials because in order to create that commercial narrative, they had to retcon Barney into a thief. So let's take a listen to the Christmas version of the old Fruity Pebbles commercials.
Season's greetings in our souls.
Yummy Fruity Pebbles in our bowls. Oh, oh, here comes you-know-who.
Yabba dabba fruitylicious do.
Oh, 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 I'm hungry.
Santa, my pebbles!
Your pebbles?
Tis the season to be sharing, Fred.
Happy holidays, pal.
Oh, Fred.
Fruity and Cocoa Pebbles cereals, part of this nutritious breakfast.
This one came back year after year.
Every year they brought this song.
Yabba dabba fruitylicious do.
Yabba dabba do. Yabba dabba fruitylicious do. Which when I was a kid, I thought I was like, ha ha ha, delicious do. That was just me as like a little kid, just going, ha.
But and there are two versions where they actually dubbed over Santa's voice in the later versions.
Oh, did they really?
All the voices, all the music was the same, but they got a new actor. Like, it was Jim Cummings in the later versions. I don't know who it was in this version.
That's really weird. I had no idea. That's really bizarre.
But yeah, they had different variations of this add-on all year round for different occasions, and I never understood the narrative of, like, why is Barney always stealing Fred's cereal? Like, again, is this a long con intervention where, like, Fred has diabetes and, like, Barney's just trying to get the cereal away from him?
And it's weird is that the Pebbles are named after Fred's daughter. So if you
that's
wanna,
true,
like,
yeah.
start reading into this, you're just sort of just like, what is this, some American Beauty like, you just like, don't go there, man. Don't go there. So, like, it's just this weird thing. And then Santa, at the end of this commercial, he's like, hey, 'tis the season to be sharing, Fred. Not an unkind word to Barney.
Right.
Barney is the
he has a halo over his head.
Yeah, Barney has been stealing from Fred. His plan was to impersonate Santa Claus, climb down his chimney, steal on Christmas Eve, no less. Fruity Pebbles, and Santa doesn't even just say, "By the way, Barney, you have a problem."
Knock off the Hans Gruber act.
What the hell is this?
Ho ho ho! He's hungry.
Yeah. Santa, my pebbles, your pebbles.
I can offer a little bit of an inside scoop on these Fruity Pebbles commercials.
Please,
do.
In college, I took an animation class from Jerry Woolery, the man who pioneered and directed the bulk of these commercials.
Wow!
From Playhouse Pictures, he taught my animation course.
That's amazing.
And they. The company acquired the rights to the Flintstones to hawk their wares, and they had to come up with a narrative. And theft was the best they could come up with. Like, it was really kind of a last-minute... like, they workshopped a couple of ideas, but that was the best they could come up with.
It's and true. The cereal is named for Fred's daughter, and who is dating Barney's son.
Which is weird! It just raises, like, all these questions that I've never even occurred to me until I just rewatched it. But I'm just like, there's some odd bits in there. Let's not discuss
it. It's a Freudian nightmare.
Fred is busy eating Bam Bams, I suppose.
No.
But the idea was they wanted to stage Fred Flintstone as, like, a curmudgeonly misanthrope. He is... Stingy with his cereal.
Well, and you know, look, the DNA of the Flintstones is all in the Honeymooners, and so, you know, they are bringing out the more Ralph Cramden-ish qualities of Fred in these ads.
Fred is in character. Fred is fine. Barney is way out of character.
He even said frequently, I'm going to trick Fred.
Well, if the idea was he's stealing the cereal just to get a rise out of his buddy, like, sure, that's fine, but otherwise it makes no sense.
Remember the one where, like, Barney put on, like a Lollapalooza concert just to get the pebbles? And I'm like,
it's a lot of effort.
How much did that cost?
You can just buy the pebbles, Barney.
Buy a case of them.
Maybe he's been kicked out of all the convenience stores in town. Like, he was just disorderly and drunk and just like, stealing all of the fruity. Like, he has no other means to get it.
He's 86 from all the cereal joints.
He can't pay his tab anywhere.
No.
Yeah.
Your rocks are no good here. So.
Fine, I'll take some Apple Jacks. You know they don't taste like apples.
Fine, I'll hunt some tricks. Those are for kids.
All right, Dave, what do you got?
The first time a TV commercial ever made me cry was a Hallmark Christmas card ad from the late 1990s. It is unavailable on the internet. Like, you cannot find it anywhere. I looked and looked and looked and looked. This is just preface to the one I actually chose. The name of the spot is Dad's House, and it's a woman. It's snowing outside. A woman drops her little son off at his father's house on Christmas Eve. The mother and father are divorced. The kid goes inside. She hands the guy a Christmas card. He opens it up. It says something to the effect of, "You're a wonderful father." And they give each other this, like, look, like, you know, we were in love once. It's over. And I'm going off to be alone on Christmas Eve. And he calls after her as she's walking back to the car. He's like, "Hey, would you like to come in and spend, you know, Christmas Eve with us?" And she does. And I watched it for the first time back when it aired in the 90s. And I was like, oh, why am I starting to cry at a Christmas card commercial?
Is this the dream of every child of divorce?
That might have been it. Anyway, so if you ever find that anywhere on the internet, look it up. Hallmark Christmas card, Dad's House is the name of the spot. I found information about it on the internet, but no actual video. Now, the one I love, now we mentioned the John Lewis ads. John Lewis is a chain of upscale department stores in the United Kingdom. But thanks to the internet, we get to see their Christmas commercials, their ad spots. And so they have become as popular on the internet as they would be in the country where they exist and where, you know, only those people get to shop at that actual store. I've never set foot in a John Lewis store. I don't know what it's like. But I do know that the 2013 spot that they did that featured Lily Allen singing Keane's Somewhere Only We Know as an animated bear and an animated rabbit who are best friends feel winter coming on, and the snowfall begins to happen, and the bear starts yawning. And the minute the bear yawns, the rabbit's ears fall down, and he gets this sad, dejected look on his face. And he realizes he's going to be months, you know, without his friend. Matters are not helped by the fact that all the woodland creatures are decorating a giant Christmas tree in preparation for Christmas, and the rabbit is very sad. So I guess we can listen to a little bit of it, and then I'll tell happens
after. It's just a song. There's nothing else in it.
No.
Right.
Like, so I'll play a few seconds of the song.
Okay.
Way like the back of my hand, I felt the earth beneath my feet, sat by the river and it made me complete. Oh simple thing, where have you gone? I'm getting tired and I need someone to rely on.
Okay, so it goes to John Lewis
and gets Christmas shoes
and gets an alarm clock so that the bear can wake up on Christmas morning and experience Christmas for the first time. And when the bear sees the tree, it's like the sun is hitting his face, and there's this immense pleasure and joy of the discovery that Christmas is a thing that exists, and it's this tree in front of you all decorated and lit up, and all the other animals are happy and cavorting around and opening Christmas presents, and he gets to have Christmas with his bunny friend. And I weep, and I weep, and I weep.
Me too.
It's freaking adorable. I've never seen this one either, and this is another one that just tells such a great little story. Like, this doesn't need to be an ad. This could be just a children's book, and it would be an adorable children's book that people would love.
I'm a little bit miffed that, you know, the makers of short films aren't willing to go as short as like 60 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Like the films that are up for Academy Awards
are
usually
like they're like 20
to 40 minutes. Yeah. It's like you can tell a really sweet story in that amount of time. That's a poem. You can have these really, the problem with ads is that they're tainted by their purpose, which is just to rake in money.
Yeah.
But you take off the tag at the end, and that's a perfectly decent short film.
It's funny that you bring that up, because there's a documentary that just got a week-long Oscar run that's going to open next year that y'all must see, called Bathtubs Over Broadway.
Oh, yeah, you were reading about it. I've heard of this.
About this guy who starts archiving these what were called industrial musicals, which were these big song and dance extravaganzas that companies would hire composers and performers to put on for like their annual sales meetings to like sort of inspire the salesman to get out there and move the product. And Richard Brody, in his review for The New Yorker, talks about how like there is genuinely interesting music and, you know, performance stuff within these musicals, but because they are created as, you know, advertising, as industrials, like, we don't take it as seriously. And so then it sort of raises the larger question of, like, who decides what art is? Mm. And who decides that this spot is not a beautiful short film just because it was created to get people to go to a department
store? I mean, all art is created for a purpose. I mean, sometimes that purpose is really obvious. Right. Sometimes it's really, you know, transitive.
Art can carry an agenda even if nobody's paying for it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I got, do you guys ever see the Virgin Airlines, you know, here's how, you know, seatbelt works and everything like that. That was directed by John Chu, that was actually with the cast of like the Step Up movie.
Oh, yes.
Dance musical. It's great. It's really fun. They did a really good job with the whole production. It's really cool. So, yeah. It's nice.
The one problem with this John Lewis ad is that in real life, it's a dick move to wake up somebody who just wants to sleep.
Yes, it is. I don't know how this affects a bear's biology. A part of me, like, expected, like, and this is the dark, cynical part of me, but, like, that big shot of, like, the bear looking at the tree and all the animals cavorting. I half expected the bear to just grab a random chipmunk and just go, late night snacks.
I have a chocolate Santa. That's a chipmunk.
No, I almost picked that one, but I really wanted to do Mrs. Claus, and then Dave was like, oh, well, then I'm picking it. So.
Yeah. Right. Which leads us finally to Whitney. You're going to take us home.
Well, I was waffling on this one. I guess I'll have to go with my original choice.
You don't have to. What do you want? Well, in that case,
I want to talk about Santa's Village.
Let's do it.
I've been to Santa's Village. I would never have heard of Santa's Village were it not for this ad.
Let's narrow
which
it down.
Incessantly.
Which Santa's Village are we speaking of?
The one off Highway 18, just 30 minutes north of San Bernardino, open weekends and holidays.
No.
there was, just outside of San Bernardino, California, a horrendously rinky-dink amusement park for children called Santa's Village. It was open year-round, but it was really popular in the wintertime because it was snowing at that time. And yeah, they had a few sort of low-rent rides. They had a few bakeries, and you could visit Santa. You could go sit on his lap and whatever you like. He was there 24 hours a day, as far as you knew. And locally in Southern California, probably even as far as Nevada and Washington, they broadcast, you know, Santa's Village. It was like the Stuckey's of TV ads. They would put the advertisements way far afield, so everybody in the immediate area knew what was going on. And like Stuckey's, by the time you had spent weeks and weeks and months anticipating going there, it was a complete anticlimax. Because there was nothing interesting there at all.
Let's play the clip.
You can see Santa in the wintertime, because right now he's at Santa's Village in the San Bernardino Mountains. 13 big rides provide fun for the whole family. Visit the petting zoo, see Santa's reindeer. There's food and treats from the Pixie Pantry, the Good Witch's Bakery, and lots more. Santa's Village is fun, forest, and fantasy, all rolled into one. Santa's Village in the cool and clear San Bernardino Mountains. On Highway 18, just 30 minutes north of San Bernardino, now open weekends and holidays.
Yeah, I never went to Santa's workshop, but we drove past it once, and I remember thinking to myself, that's Santa's workshop?
Because Santa's Village,
They would play these ads, Santa's Village, they would play these ads all the time with, like, our Saturday morning cartoons here in Los Angeles, and it would seem like it was supposed to be a big deal. I knew it wasn't Disneyland, but I thought it was going to be a little bit more magical than just... We painted these buildings in pastels.
Yeah.
Could you at least get a pecan roll the way you can at Stuckey's?
They had there were food and treats from the Pixie's Pantry and the Good Witch's Bakery and lots more.
I take it you saw this ad a few times.
A few times, like four times a day from before Halloween, perhaps, all the way through New Year's Day. They played after Christmas, too.
Wow.
And there were two versions, one that started with, you can see Santa in the wintertime. Well, that's not so unusual. That's usually when he comes out.
He's everywhere.
Groundhog Day in early February.
But then there was another version where you could see Santa in the summertime as well. There were two introductions. Yeah.
That was not.
You could see Santa in the summertime. Okay. Mm-hmm. How do you sell Santa in the summertime?
He's
you can see
shorts.
Santa in the summertime.
this amusement park eventually fell apart, and they've been trying to, like, reopen it.
Yeah, they've been trying to get the nostalgia dollar from people around my age. Remember, did you go to Santa's Village? Yeah, I went once. What did you think? It was really anticlimactic. You want to give us money? No!
I was very excited about the prospect of going, because I did not grow up in a place that had Santa's Villages.
Uh-huh.
And so I like the idea of a rinky-dink amusement park that is also Christmas-themed. That is catnip.
Here's what I don't understand. Santa's Village was, like, a minor landmark, like people knew about it. It was at least locally famous in Southern California,
right?
For many, many years. How has there not been a slasher film set there? How has there not been like a chopping mall? Chopping Mall is about robots, but like slasher movie set at a Christmas-themed little amusement park.
Mm.
That writes itself. How does that not exist?
That's Krampus 2. That's coming.
Okay, I'm fine with that. Yeah. That sounds good.
But yeah, the notion of not just a Christmas-themed amusement park, but a now-defunct Christmas-themed amusement park makes it kind of mythic in a way.
Mm.
Like, you tell somebody about this, and there's no context for it anymore. I don't think these never really took off in the way like a Magic Mountain did. There isn't like a big high-end corporate-owned
Christmas park. But there are a lot of regional ones.
Yeah.
That's why Dave asked which one, because they are all over the place. And I know
the most famous one is in Dundee, Indiana.
Okay,
it's still operational.
Yeah.
It became kind of a big amusement park. I mean, that's my understanding. I've never been there, but you know, I've done the research.
there are some extant ones. The Brian Lynch, who does the Tinseltown podcast about Christmas movies, did a road trip across the country this summer and talked about going to one of them that was open in the summer. And there was literally like, there's a Thanksgiving section of the park and a Christmas section. And, you know, like he had a turkey dinner in July and it was delicious. You know?
That sounds really nice.
I would totally go to one of those.
Yeah, like that's a good idea. I mean, I think the talk was when they were talking about bringing Santa's Village back over here was that it would be only seasonal.
Yeah.
It would be like November and December. Like
right.
That would be it.
Yeah.
Which is probably the only sensible business model for that, because just the operational costs probably would be stupid.
Yeah.
But I'll go.
From what I understand, like a lot of abandoned amusement parks, they just left it there.
Yeah.
They just left. Mm. So you can probably break in there, and you know that's a good slasher movie.
Yeah.
It's like do you guys ever, when you're driving to and from Vegas, drive past the Rockahula Water Park?
Oh yeah.
It's really like. Really in the middle of nowhere, like it's 60 miles to the next village in either direction. And yeah, it was supposed to be this big summertime water slide park. Wasn't successful because nobody could get out to it. The production costs were really, really high. They built all of these parks and then they just left. Like the plumbing was still working when they left. The lights were still on when they left. And there's like journalists who have done photo essays on what it looks like now, and it's of course been tagged up
by
spray painters, and the roaches have moved in.
But the land is really expensive and completely out of the way from anywhere. People expect you to drive to these places, so yeah, there, a lot of these things are just these decrepit husks.
Well, yeah, the ones that were conveniently located and failed became condos or whatever. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you know, yeah. it's only the ones that are out in the middle of nowhere that are still around because like nobody else wanted to replace it with something else.
Do you guys ever watch a YouTube series called Defunct Land?
It's mostly about Disneyland.
Well,
like
not
failed
just
Disneyland stuff.
It's about failed amusement park attractions and amusement parks.
What's the show that you were watching
on
Viceland?
There was a show on Viceland called Abandoned.
Yeah.
Where they go to abandoned amusement parks and dead shopping malls and places like that.
Well, Defunct Land is like the history of failed amusement parks, but also just rides that no longer exist when they're trying to recreate them. Mm. Find as much
footage. Oh, right, I've heard about that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Adventures through inner space. That's
really
exactly.
It's really, really fascinating. And there's at least a couple that are like dead amusement parks, and they just show you here's the tragedy of it. It was sold to make room for all this thing, and people really loved it, and the land never sold, and they might as well have just kept it open, but they didn't. And, it's a really great YouTube series. They do a really good job with it. Mm. Like, it's just short documentaries like every other week.
Oh,
it's
cool.
Fantastic.
Well, hey, that's the 12 Ads of Christmas.
Woo!
Why don't you guys tell, for people who are not regular listeners to Cancel Too Soon, where y'all are, what you do, your Patreon, all that good stuff? All
right, well, Cancel Too Soon is the podcast Whitney and I created and host where we review television series that lasted only one season or less. There's a lot of those.
So many.
For every one you've heard of, there are dozens, literally dozens you have not, and it's been really fun exploring all of those. That show is freely available on iTunes, Stitcher, but we also have a Patreon account, patreon.com/canceledtoosoon. Canceled is spelled with one L, because that's acceptable. So a lot of people, as soon as we picked
that's
it.
Correct.
People said
correct,
it was 2012. We looked it up, it was one L. Both are fine.
Double L in Britain, where they spell color with a U.
but we have a Patreon where we have bonus podcasts that are available, where we review TV movies. We also have a bonus podcast called Only the Best, where we're reviewing every single nominee for Best Picture in order, like in chronological order. Oh, so that's only available for our Patreon subscribers.
Our next one is going to be the 6th Academy Awards.
Yeah, which is Cavalcade and Little Women, and that was A Fugitive from a Chain Gang.
Private Life of Henry VIII.
42nd Street. A lot of really cool stuff on that one. So we got that over there, and there are other perks. You can vote for an episode of the show every single month, so you get to help us decide what we're going to be covering. It's a lot of fun.
You can make these guys write an article if you're at a high
enough
level.
That's true. We also have our podcast Critically Acclaimed, which is on the Schmoes Know Network. We review new movies, and we do a double feature every week of a notoriously bad film as selected by our listeners, and then we pair it with a classic film of our choice.
You guys selected Son of the Mask, and I hate you.
We're not happy about that.
Well, that's what you get when you ask.
That's true. We did offer it. You selected.
And if you're a Cancel Too Soon listener who doesn't know about Linoleum Knife, Dave and I do a weekly show about new movies, and that is also available on iTunes and Spotify and all the places where you get your podcasts caught. And we also have a Patreon page at patreon.com/linoleumknife, where we offer extra programs like LKTV, a podcast of the television, where we talk about stuff like this, Linoleum Knife and Fork, a food podcast hosted by two film critics, and Linoleum Nights, the show where we swear and talk about politics and religion and topics we don't usually get into in the other shows. We also have prizes and hangouts online and cool other stuff, so check out patreon.com.
Cool other stuff.
So it's very cool, very legal.
Cool.
That's the name for my invite to Linoleum Nights, so we can like make it blue.
You're in.
Yeah.
Come over early on a Sunday morning.
Sunday morning, we'll make it happen.
When it goes down.
My
randiest.
All right.
You can't even record on a Saturday night. You record on Sunday morning.
We record on Sunday morning.
Yeah. If you're in England, it's a nighttime show.
We're going to get really randy on this pleasant spring.
Look, we have at least one listener in Sweden and one in the Netherlands. And so it is at night for them.
Yeah. Nice. It's always 5 o'clock somewhere. Anyway, so yeah, please check out our show if you haven't already. Y'all, it's been a delight. Thank you for coming over. And Bibbs, this was your idea. Thank you for thinking of it.
It was our idea.
Well,
thank you for having us in your home to record.
Always a treat. And whatever it is you guys celebrate, have a wonderful holiday season, and we look forward to talking to you again soon. And until then,
goodbye.